Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Fill My Eyes with Poetry. Happy Friday. Hope everyone had a great day. Hope you all had a great weekend. As always, I hope you have a better weekend to follow. Hey, Rex, how are you tonight?
I'm doing just fine. Any happy news?
Wonderful. Any happy news? Happy news. Happy news. I don't know. Maybe. Fresh. Whisper something. Tell me what I'm supposed to be noticing that I may have missed.
We just broke the top 10.
Did we really?
Yep.
Are you serious?
Yep. We
no
rolled
way.
Past the rage of football. So we're number 10.
Oh, my God. Well, there we go. I like it. Yes, that's always good. I like it very much. Yes, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. See, you always tell me what I need to know. Somebody's got to keep me straight, I guess. You know how that is. But, that's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, I haven't looked today, or I haven't looked in, like, probably the last week. I just keep saying, look out, Seth Meyers. We're heading your way. Look out. It's kind of fun. A little bit of a challenge that some may not be aware of, but you know, it's just, I don't know, it's comical to keep an eye on it. You never know what'll happen. But yeah, we got that. I'm not sure where the late nights are. I know they were sitting, I think, at number 16.
Still
in bed,
16.
You know. Yeah, 10 out of 80 is not something to complain about. I will say that. And 16 out of, I don't even know what the big number is over there.
60.
60? Well, that ain't bad.
Yeah.
Not bad at all. So, what a good day that is. It's all fun. Yeah, it always makes me kind of grin a little bit because you never know. I don't even know how we got there, but gosh darn it, we got there. I'm so thankful you found it. So I didn't know where to look. Yes. So we have a good board tonight. I have noticed we have a good board. Yes, I had to lock it. It was getting like, I think we had like 24. I said, if I didn't lock it, I was probably going to have like 28 or 29, and we were going to have a problem. Because, you know, then we'd be like carrying the things over and trying to keep track of everything. And it gets rough, you know. But, well, happy Friday to you. And hopefully we can have a nice, smooth, comfortable show tonight. I like it. Seems kind of quiet tonight, though. I think everybody's a little, I don't know, must have been a rough week or something. Oh, Halloween, that might have done it. All those spells and incantations. Yeah. All those crazy rites we had to do. No, I'm only kidding. It was a good week. Halloween week turned out very nicely, I thought. And Monday was a great kicker for the whole thing. Just, you know, great way to end it. Lots of wonderful poetry, lots of fun. So, I don't know. So what's happening with you? Anything?
No, just it's lightly raining.
Oh, it's raining?
Yeah.
I think we had rain yesterday. I just kind of shook my head and said, into every life a little rain must fall or something? I don't know the exact quote. Close enough. It's close enough for government work. But, it's just been kind of yucky. But typical, you know, fall kind of stuff. Oh, goodness gracious alive. Well, not sure what else is cooking, but since we have lots of poetry and we have a caller on the line, I believe Laurent is with us. So, hello, Laurent. How are you?
I'm good. Hey, top 10, you got to uncork the champagne.
I do that every other day just because.
Party up.
Mm-hmm. That's about right. That is about right. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, since it's Halloween, maybe we should do a bit of Irish whiskey.
You can declare a public holiday.
Oh, my God. I don't know about the rest of you. I'm in for the gin. I'm not up for all that other fancy schmancy stuff. No.
The Bombay Blues are calling.
Well, what the hell is it called?
I forget what the name of this stuff is. Oh, Aviator. Aviation. It's Aviation American Gin.
Good stuff. I just keep it sitting next to me figuring, you know, if I look at it long enough, maybe I'll get a little bit of a giggle or something. Yeah. God forbid I drank this stuff. God knows what would happen then. But, see? Longfellow, thank you, Dave. See? I don't know the whole quote, but I pay a little bit of attention. My fate is the common fate of all, and to each life, some rain must fall. By Longfellow. See, good thing I got Dave out there to keep me straight. Well, I love that. Nobody's accomplished that in 60 years. Oh, did I say that out loud? 60 years, yes. I am 60 now. Fine by me, actually. Really doesn't matter.
No, it's downhill from here.
You know, who are you, Mr. Doom and Gloom? God. I don't know. I don't need This is abuse now. Don't start trouble.
Come on. You left that door wide open. That was too easy.
Oh, yeah. I'm telling you what. I don't know.
My life's been an uphill battle all this time. What makes me think I'm going down now?
You know, to struggle to get there. Uh-oh. There you go. We got one from Zeppelin, too. Yeah, Dan, go ahead. Depends on what mood I'm in, I guess, which one I want to quote. I'll take it from both of them. It's all good. Oh, my gosh. I don't know. Oh, my goodness gracious alive. So, listen, I guess we better get started. We got lots of poetry, and,
We
only have 2 hours. Now we have 1 hour and 50 minutes because I've played around for 10 of those. I'll tell you what, Rex, I'm going to have you kick us off, and I'm going to put up a piece by DJ GS117. Ta-da! Hey, it looks like.
Memories by DJ GS117. A cacophony of epiphanies haphazardly entrapping me, disastrously laughing at me, emphatically, enigmatically, a calamity of insanity, harrowingly towering to my mind as devouring, a systematic catastrophe, at last we see tragedy, emotional atrophy, distractingly captivating, so simply redirecting, no connecting or expecting, no selecting, introspecting, disinfecting my recollecting, retrospecting for self-reflecting, interjecting, met with deflecting, neglecting the convecting, correcting the subjecting, misdirecting, reconnecting, denying the resurrecting. And boom. Could you give me one a little more harder?
Wow.
Laurent, why don't you kick this off?
I would love to see what Autorag did with this one. Oh, my God. This is great wordplay. You can appreciate the skill with which he constructed this. It's up, it's down, it's sideways. I don't know any direction that this poem does not go into. Overall, it's a little, it's not happy. It's not really sad. It's somewhere in between. But very enlightening piece. I like it.
Thank you, Rob. All right, Gene, what do you think?
Wow. All I did was went by the first name of the poet, by the way, just so that you don't think I picked this special for you.
I'm sorry.
I probably would have. Anyway, just like, because, you know, I'd have tripped all over it. But I think it was a very well done piece. It was nicely penned, and I like the use of language in it. It kind of held your attention and had a nice sound in your ear. You know, as I was listening to you, I'm like, okay. And each line had a rhythm all its own, and I think it was just well done in that piece. And I thought that it was not, you know, a cheerful piece, but it was definitely not, all doom and gloom either. I think it was just nicely penned and well done. So thank you, DJ GF. Absolutely. Oh, and by the way, Kevin, like you just said, I want to tell you that Kevin said, try to avoid ing.
Oh my God. Yeah, I think Laurent kicked us off right. The thought of memories. There's a nice note to falsity in that, and how over time memories, they get whitewashed, they get remolded into something else, and he hits on that. You got tragedy, you got atrophy, calamity of insanity. Disinfecting my recollecting. So there's the idea of the falsity of memory to begin with. What you know 10 years ago doesn't reflect the same 10 years future on or 10 years past that. So the idea of walking back in time, you might think it was good, but it's only a reflection of what you're feeling now looking back on, which is kind of a different touch of looking at something and rolling it in this flavor. Thank you, DJ.
For my next magic trick, I'm going to read this piece by Kiku. Now, first I have to make it big enough that I can see it. This is called home was always a complicated word for me. That's just tiny. I lived far from what was considered home, achieved what my parents thought was the American dream, yet like many, we still end up daydreaming of home. In the piece of mid-autumn, Mom was in the backyard, insistent on watering the overgrown roses. Their thorns enveloping, burrowing into the rusted shed, filled with tools we would never use nor wish to give away. Under the white magnolia tree, sprigs of life sprawling, she picked a memory full of for tonight's summer rolls, a garden from their homeland, a souvenir kept from me. Everyone had their own ways of rolling with it. I was the ambitious one, always overstuffing mine, not always the most presentable, but I've grown to be practical. That's what I appreciated about things like this. As we have dinner, I'd think about you. How did I not know then what it was I felt? When a fleeting moment became eternity, and eternity felt in the briefest of moments. I could not play another elegy for you, even with our enduring silence. Often, you reminded me of that 170 song, we're here for a good time, not a long time. And sometimes a certain clarity washes over me, where we laid down every receding breath. Every new phrase is like a breaking of familiar waves, because isn't every poem an unfinished a love poem? I realize death isn't just a selfish scavenger. It's gifts imparted to us like some hand-me-down, put to a child born from the aftermath of war. Home was always a complicated word for me. And home.
Great read, Jean. Thank you very much. And this is quite the piece from Kiku. I like that open little four lines. I live far from what was considered home, achieve what my parents thought was the American dream. Yet, like many, we still end up daydreaming of home. Kind of hits on that notion of you can never go home, but reality is you often dream of going back to that maybe a little bit of simpler time, and the memories that wash in with that, the magnolia trees, the roses, the thoughts around the dinner table, and that one song that was always something that was adhered to. So this idea of home being a complicated word for Kiko, it hits on that notion of wanting that greater realm of walking outside of what your parents did, but understanding the value later on in life of what your parents did and how they lived it. And you kind of wish that the times were a bit simpler so that you could still roll within that world. Yes, as time moves, so does everything else, and nothing is ever simple anymore. Nicely done, Kiko. But Ron, how about you?
Sorry, I was on mute. This is a pretty awesome piece. I want to quote one stanza, if I might. And sometimes a certain clarity washes over me, where we've laid down every receding breath, every new phrase is like the breaking of familiar waves, because isn't every poem unfinished a love poem? Almost as a confessional, presenting herself as she was, as she is now, and realizing that home does change as we age. Every new phase is like the breaking of familiar waves. I like that. And the last stanza is especially relevant. I realize death isn't just a selfish scavenger. It isn't. Teaches us so many things, impending death. It's a great, great piece.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And Jean, since you got to read it, what about you?
Well, first off, I want to tell you we have Dexter with us. Hey, Dex. Welcome to the party. It's good to have you.
Hey.
Hey, Dex.
Glad I could be here.
Glad I could be here. Mm-hmm. That's always good when you call. We enjoy your company. I wanted to say about Kiku's piece. I thought it was just wonderful work. It was well penned and thoughtful in the story, the tale she told, the emotions that she shared with us. And just a beautiful job. This is actually written for Part Sinner, Part Saint for Faziana. And I find it to be just really nicely penned. So thank you so much, Kiku, for sharing it with us. Much appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Dex, did you happen to hear this piece?
I did. And maybe, you know, contrary to some or maybe against, you know, whatever others, I consider this to be a classical piece. Right? And I consider this to be a classic piece, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. The wording and the style of this rite is extraordinary. And I don't know, and some people might consider the classics them or the classics this. I think that the way that the place that she put us all in mentally with this rite is right in line with what I would consider classic, and so I think this is a phenomenal rite.
I think I would have to agree with you. Yeah. I think I'd have to kind of agree with that a bit, Zach. It kind of took me to a thought of a movie I once saw, A Walk in the Clouds. Kind of had that kind of feel in the back of my mind. So I can kind
absolutely.
Of totally get where you're coming from. That. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Well, let's see what's happening. We have, well, Laurent, I'm going to ask you to read this next piece by S. Sharp, and I just have to put it up, and there we go, whenever you're ready.
Humanity by S. Sharp. Your leaves green blow upon the winds of your dominion. Beauty is the cherry blossom in March. All the world admires you, the fruit of promise. Your fruit matures in the hazy sun, peeking through the overcast. Mixed virtues of June, where the sun wants, where the moon needs, and they swoon in the morning sky, seeking your attention. In the heat of August, you see your dominance over all aspects of existence. Fruit ripe for the picking, mastering the processes of heaven and earth, you create the clocks of nature, pulling apart creation, putting it together, becoming the creator. A cold truth touches with the first frost, where life knows death. October, where the fall is what happens, the season of our deeds drops like leaves to the ground. Winter rides in on the shoulders of retribution. Cold winds blow the sting upon your face as the last breath of God split on a stormy winter night like an atom. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. And Dex, why don't we start with you, please?
Yeah, that was a fantastic read, Laurent. And I think that this is a great poem, and I think that it goes, you know, back and forth. And whenever you're, it's almost like an ice cube. I think that when it says that you go from the coldest to the hottest, it actually reacts to the water the quickest to make it freeze. You know, and I feel like in this poem it does that. It goes from heaven to earth and to from heaven to hell and from October, you know, where the fall ends and the deeds, you know, it just seems like it takes us from one abstract to the next. And it does that so well that feel at home within that centerpiece. And I just thought this was a fantastic write.
Excellent. Thank you, Doug. Gene, how about you?
I thought this was a great piece. I'm not on mute. I had to double check myself. I think it was an excellent work by Scott, and I loved that walk through the seasons where he took us through, you know, fall and the winter and, you know, March and the spring, you know. And I really liked the way he did that. I went to pull his stanza, and I'm going, oh, how do I pick a season? So I go, I like the intro stanza, you know, your late leaves green, blow upon the winds in your dominion. Beauty is the cherry blossoms in March. All the world admires you, the fruit of promise. It is a wonderful way to begin those peaks. And, you know, I like where he took it from there as he walked through the seasons. And I thought it was just very well done. It wasn't, you know, the normal walk through the seasons. He definitely had a new approach to that in my eyes. And I thought it was just a great job. So thank you, Scott, for sharing with us.
Yes, yes, yes. And Laurent, you got to read it. How about you?
Hugely impressive piece. He gives us in wonderful language the seasons to admire and to reflect on, as well as the seasons of man as he ages, because I think the metaphor runs concurrently throughout the piece. As well put together as this is, that last stanza that really sends a shiver, as it should, winter, off my back. Winter rides in on the shoulders of retribution. Retribution for a life either well spent or ill spent, it matters not, but it's the retribution that we receive when we die. In other words, the retribution is not always bad. It can be good, I imagine. But the cold winds that blow the sting upon your face, the last breath of God, definitely leads me to believe that it's the winter is the season when everyone dies, and it's the season when reflectively, as a metaphor, man dies. Wonderful piece.
Excellent. And I'm right with you on that sort of the age of man walking from youth through through death. But there's a deeper tone in this, too, because he hits on the sort of the last breath of God split on a stormy winter night like an atom. There is that kind of heavier note of, like from the Bhagavad Gita that Oppenheimer opined on. I have become the destroyer.
I was wondering about that. I almost said that, but I chickened out, David.
No, it works well because he wrote it as humanity. And that's almost like an epitaph to finish out the back
yep.
end of, are we going to be that stupid?
Yeah.
Great comments, everybody. Thank you very much. All right, team, we're coming back to you.
Okay. Well, the next piece I have, I'm going to put up for Dexter. And Dex, can you read this for us by Darkened Auras? I'd appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thank you, hon.
This is Darkened Auras. Oh no. Help me please. There isn't any breeze. When I take a bad breath, my throat on fire. How long until the wick will explode? They cut into me. Biggest knife scooped out of my gut. Destroyed my life. I watch my buddies. Smashed heavy boots, their face clashed. I'm traumatized. Please save me. Lord, why couldn't I have been born a gore? End poem.
Great read there, Dex. Thank you very much. And Laurent, why don't you kick us off, please?
Well, that brevity brought a broad smile to my face. I thought it was a well-rhymed Halloween ditty. And I really love the personification. Great job.
Thank you, Laurent. And Jean, how about you?
I thought it was a great piece. I thought it was humorous, and it was well done. And, you know, anything to bring a smile to our face, right? Nothing like wonderful Halloween poetry. And, you know, we're going to taper out, you know, from the season, I'm sure. And I enjoyed it very much. So thank you, Darkened Auras, for sharing with us. Nice piece.
Thank you, Gene. And Dex, you got to read. How about you?
You know, I think that pieces like that are always going to be in style, you know, to a certain extent, because, you know, we all need to a certain point to be brought back to that place. And I thought this place brings us back to that, like, kind of a little bit more childish humor and right to a place that maybe you know, sometimes we distant further from. So I thought this was very appropriate and very well done.
Absolutely. Great commentary. This was a fun piece. And I gotta go with the ending because it adds an extra laugh. Because the funny thing is, technically, a pumpkin is a gourd, so gets his wish at the end.
Yes.
Back to you, Dean.
Okay, well, let me see. The next piece I'm going to put up is called Spatial Awareness by Robert M. So let me play that audio, and here we go.
A Brand New Day by Martha Gettle.
Hey, Robert, got a new voice.
This is my recital of Spatial Awareness. A poem inspired by the band Ginger. I often find myself drifting into welcome slumber on the days when depressive fatigue settles in. My mind seems to think that I can escape my problems by sleeping. Yet sometimes in the trek from one consciousness to the other, I end up getting lost along the way. Where am I? Seems like I am drifting in space. Ego emaciated by frigid disarray, I am starting to feel as though I am merely a jawless piranha swimming through a cosmic sea. The vast ocean of existence humbles me like a fish out of water, trying desperately to find myself amidst the brutal nature of chaos. Defenseless and skittish, yet somehow still resonant, as these blemished scales oddly reflect the swirling enigmas that bestow their beauty upon me. This worn armor, blessed by the infinite galactic wonder, allows me to feel majestic and mystical, if even for a minor ripple in the river of time. With this newfound grace, I can feel all of the currents and torrents strewn about in the endless dark. Supernovas and massive vortices are merely baubles for me to admire. I now speak the language of celestial bodies and feel the weight of the unnamed voids. Energy teems, crackling within my feeble frame, inciting vigor with epiphanic discovery. Caressed by starlight in its rawest form, kissed by the golden dust of creation, yet burdened by an unending darkness, I find that myself and the universe are one and the same.
Wonderful read, Robert. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Dex, why don't we start with you, please?
I thought this was just a remarkable piece and done just in a stylistic fashion that is one with a timeless fashion. You know, there's certain horror and anxiety that is done in a timeless fashion, and it is felt throughout the years, and I thought that Robert nailed that.
Excellent. Thank you, Dex. And Gene, how about you?
Let me try it here instead of there. I thought it was a great write, as always, by Robert. Wonderfully expressed piece, and a great take on the prompt itself. You know, he just has a wonderful way with words, and his audios, as always, you know, were fabulous. They're easy to listen to, you know, and it's very easy to take in his words because it's palatable is not really the right word, but it's close enough for government work and for me, you know. But very well done piece, and thank you, Robert, for sharing that with us on the board tonight. Very much appreciated.
Thank you, Gene. And Laurent, how about you?
Robert is a writer who uses language vividly and with such poise, nothing seems unnatural. The idea of drifting into welcome slumber when depressive fatigue settles in is, I believe, a self-defense mechanism. The mind seems to want to just shut down and find some peace. And it gives us this, I don't know if you want to call it a dream or an interpretation of a feeling, but the way he uses that drawless piranha imagery, the idea of an insatiable hunter without the means to do what he wants to do is, I think, very clever. And the metaphor of the fish is continued all the way through. That fish out of water with blemished scales, the worn armor, feeling majestic, feeling it mystical, even for a minor ripple in the river of time. And he moves on to the currents and torrents strewn about in the endless dark. His language is just dramatic. The penultimate stanza, I now speak the language of celestial bodies and feel the weight of the unnamed voids. Energy teems crackling within my feeble frame, inciting vigor with epiphanic discovery. Just remarkable writing.
I agree. Excellent. Thank you very much. I thought the introspective dip into a third eye reality, looking beyond oneself and rolling within that tidal view, the thought with the fish hit me real well too, because it hits at a haunting bite at the minuscule nature of self in the grand volume of things. And you get that notion of emptiness upon realization that, hey, I'm just a small atom in this large pool, and there is so much to behold, yet it all sits at odds and even seemingly hands away from oneself in the moment. So you can get lost in the morass. Nicely done, Robert. Thank you very much. All right, Gene, it's back to you.
Okay, well, first I'd like to say, Dex, you need some Velcro for your chair. And I'd like to welcome Naomi to the show. Hey, Naomi, welcome aboard.
Hi.
Hey,
hi, everybody.
Oh,
I love Naomi that she's on.
Okay, let's see that. Rex, I'm going to come to you with the next, which is by Poeta de Cabra. So if you'd be so kind.
Ooh, cool. Monster at My Window by Poeta de Cabra. There's a monster at my window, scaring me half to death, now fogging up the glass with his evil and bated breath. Why does he scare children whilst tucked up in our bed? Hope he doesn't break in and tear me up in shreds. He seems to be crying out, clutching at his throat, started to read his lips, decided I should take notes. Can I have a glass of water? I'm so thirsty, I could die. Monster was a poor old man. He was parched and very dry. It seemed like he had Alzheimer's. Poor man was lost and all alone. Then begged my mom and dad, returning to the nursing home. End poem. And
oh,
Naomi, why don't we start with you, please?
Yeah, well, you know, it was funny up till, can I have a glass of water? I'm so thirsty, I could die. But then, you know, when you find out that it's a poor old man who has Alzheimer's, then it becomes, you know, suddenly not so funny anymore. You know, there's a lot of people that suffer from that off. Disease, you know, and yeah, but great rhythm, great rhyme, and you know, very thought provoking near the end. Very well done. Very, very good poem.
Thank you, Naomi. And Laurent, how about you?
well, black humor, definitely, and does what black humor should do. It takes something serious and makes it halfway funny in order to make a point. And you're certain that it's going to be, oh, perhaps a Halloween poem until you get to that third stanza, and he finds out it's a poor old man who had Alzheimer's. Could it be regenerated? I mean, the mood changes entirely, but very skillfully. It's not out of rhythm in any way, and it's very very skillful, very thought provoking, very serious despite its humor.
Absolutely, thank you, Lorraine. And Jean, how about you?
Well, kind of with Naomi and Laurent, you know, it does have, you know, great touch of humor in the beginning, and then all of a sudden it turns. And when it turns, it's kind of, it is sad, and it's very, it makes you stop, and it makes you think for a second, like, wow, this is, you know, this is very, very sad. And, but I think that he did a good job with it, and I think that he handled it well. And he says here is pain, rhyme, sad, and scary. So, I mean, he acknowledges that that's what it's supposed to be, it's sad. And I think that he hit all those notes he was going for. So nice job, Poeta, and thank you for sharing, as always.
Thank you, Jean. And Dex, how about you?
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I thought it was a fantastic write. You know, Monster at My Window, I thought it captured everything that it needed to, and I just thought everybody kind of touched on it very well. Can I have a glass of water? I'm so thirsty I could die. Monster was a poor old man. He was parched and very dry. You know, there's a sense of humor, which was what the old classic style monster and horror movies had. And so I don't know. I just thought this was very perfect for the time.
Excellent. Thank you, Dex. And you're right. The humor was dark, black, as Ron said. And I like the fact he took this from a child's perspective. So you don't realize until you get to that last stanza. And of course, the parents have got to explain the fact about Alzheimer's and why this guy's doing walkabout in the first place. So nicely touched upon, Poeta. Thank you very much.
Okay.
All right, Jane. Yeah, back to you.
Okie dokie. The next one I'm going to put up is by Allison Hodges. I'm going to give that one a read. And here we go. This is called Sunrise. The cobwebs swept off. Wait, let me start that again in the right fashion. Sunrise by Allison Hodges. The cobwebs swept from off her hair, the dark of night no longer there. She raises from bed to face the day, as joy upon her face displays. The grace she fills each with each dawn's break, with each sweet promise she will make, a light of all that shines within, of all the love that's ever been. Such sweet ripe fruit upon the vine does linger where her thoughts incline, and sunlight spreads and drips upon her dappled cheek beneath the dawn. And home.
Great, Jean. Great read, Jean. Thank you very much. And Laurent, why don't we start with you, please?
Certainly. I like the rhythm to this. I like the idea of the sunrise and the sunlight spreading, dripping upon her dappled cheeks beneath the dawn. It's a beautiful image. The cobwebs swept from off her hair. I don't know if it's literal, it's probably figurative. The dark of night, no longer there. It's a nicely rhyming piece that gives us sunshine.
Excellent. Thank you. And Naomi, how about you? Naomi, you there?
I discovered the mute button on my cell phone. Hi, I'm muting myself now. And I kind of forget it. So I started mutating me too. But this is an amazing personification of the
of the sun, of a sunrise, you know, here. I just love, you know, it all throughout. You know, such sweet white ripe fruit upon the vine does linger, where her thoughts incline, sunlight spreads and drips upon her dappled cheeks beneath the dawn. Yeah, it could be, you know, all about the sunrise, or it could be somebody that's basking in the sunrise. But, you know, I take it as the sunrise, but the grace she feels with each dawn's break. And, you know, the line that Laurent cobwebs swept from off her hair, you know, like when the darkness of the night, those dark clouds sweep along the sky, you know, as the sun rises. You know, that's a lovely metaphor. They're like cobwebs. Well, I took it like that anyway. And, you know, I thought that was brilliant to describe that like that, the cobwebs. But as the darkness of the night sweeping away, being swept away by the sunrise. But amazing, amazing writing here by Alison Hodges. Bravo. Great writing.
Thank you, Naomi. And Dex, how about you?
Well, I thought this piece was fantastic, and kind of what, you know, maybe this is me misinterpreting it, maybe this is me interpreting it in like kind of the newer generation, 2022. I work within the school system, and so we constantly get conditioned about viewing things in a certain light. I feel like this is almost viewing the or the impossible expectation that women are set up with as being the sunrise. You know how spectacular the sunrise is. And I just got the feeling from this piece that it was like almost about, you know, it was kept comparing it to the sunrise, and that was almost the expectation that women have been set up to be. And I thought that this was a fantastic piece, and I enjoyed it a lot.
Awesome.
My take there, Dex. Thank you. And Jean, how about you, since you read it?
Well, you know, I thought it was a beautiful brother. You know, I thought there was lovely imagery throughout. And each stanza was nicely done. I liked each one. But I also liked the closing stanza. You know, that's the one that Naomi had quoted. Such sweet ripe fruit upon the vine does linger where her thoughts incline. And sunlight spreads and drips upon her dappled cheek beneath the dawn. I just thought it was a lovely ending to the whole piece, and I thought it tied it together nicely with the bow. So, well done, Allison, and thank you so much for sharing with us tonight. Absolutely.
Yeah, this was a lovely piece. I got two thoughts out of it. The cobweb swept off from off her hair, kind of the idea of the early morning, the getting the cobwebs out of your brain, so to speak, waking up. And there is such a nice touch to joy in meeting the new day. So it kind of hits on the idea for me of an older lady and taking every new day as it comes because, hey, there might not be many left. So you enjoy every bit of grace you get from each single day you wake up to that new sunrise. But on the literality angle, this could walk as how a sunflower greets the day when it's coming to life, because it closes up in the evening and opens up to the sun, and it traverses the realm as the sun moves across the sky. So this could walk that very much, very same thought in a different manner. I like that. Nice, Allison. Thank you very much. And that's Becca to you, Jean.
Okay, Laurent, I'm going to put the next review by Peter Chapman. Whenever you're ready.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. It has always been you, Cedar Chapman. How could I have known I was born broken? photosynthesizing sunlight and growing deep roots in fertile soil just isn't enough. I long to walk, to soar, to be wanted, to feel the ocean air and smell the salty seas, to have the spring breeze tantalize my skin, sending shivers down my spine. It wasn't any recipe book, but I should have known from the day you walked into English class in your baby blue Daniel Hector sweater, ankle cropped jeans, and white canvas head, no socks, of course. I was but a small fry in a large fishbowl of pimples and hormones, a boy flexing his fins, trying to swim upstream with teenage men, hoping you would notice a baby face. Difficult to fathom why you didn't jump on a 5-foot, 100-pound frame, flayed seedling carried by the wind, nurturing an involuntary 10-year friend's plan to whittle you down and woo you with each midnight to sunrise phone call. You were walking along the shoreline, hands locked, crooning, foamy waves caressing flattened sand. You saw me play beach volleyball, years spent studying Arnold Schwarzenegger's Modern Encyclopedia of Bodybuilding. No longer half a boy, yet half a man, incomplete, until that eventful New Year's Eve, when I pushed our entire friendship to the center of the poker table and kissed you. So here we are, three kids later, approaching freedom 55. I'm sleeping in wool socks, wearing a toque, while you're half naked in your granny's star-shaped cross crystallizing on an open bedroom window. Gravity is cruel for our bodies. Your eyes sag, uncertain, even when knowing I am broken without you. It's always big. I still shiver every night, perhaps like sheepish boyish grin. Tonight, you'll reach for my thigh, and I'll smell the salt air again. And
great read, LaRoff. Thank you very much. All right, Gene, you got to kick this one off first.
Figures, because I was biting, but I think this was just a wonderful piece. Peter Chapman's poetry never ceases to amaze me. There's so much in it. Wonderful thoughts and feelings and emotions. The imagery in this is wonderful. You know, I totally love this, the ending piece. You know, gravity is cruel to our bodies. Your eyes sad, uncertain. Even when knowing I am broken without you, it's always been you. I still shiver and shiver every night. Perhaps with my sheepish, boyish grin tonight you'll reach for my thigh, and I'll smell the salty sea air again. What a wonderful ending for this. For being a young man to think, or a young person, I'll say, this is just fabulous. And God, you know, you wouldn't know it. You would think he lived this. And I think that's what's so incredible about it all to me. So wonderful work, Peter Chapman, and thank you so, so much for always sharing with us. It's a wonderful piece.
Excellent. Thank you, Gene. And Dexter, how about you?
Yeah, I thought that this was a fantastic piece. You know, the way that they revolved this entire story about one singular point, I thought that was just fantastic, and that's just love, you know. Gravity is cruel to our bodies, your eyes sag uncertain, you know, I'm broke without you, it's always been you. It's just such an endearing story. I just thought it was fantastic.
Thank you, Dex. Naomi, what do you think?
Oh, yeah, this is wonderful. I know it seems, you know, so sincere and you know, real. Just the way it's written, but, you know, in plain language, he's telling us a story here. You know, the story, maybe his story. You know, he doesn't say things like out loud, like normal, but he, you know, a flame seedling carried by the wind, nurturing an involuntary 10-year friend's plan to whittle you down and woo you. You know, and then he goes on with this beautiful imagery of walking along the shoreline. And, you know, when he does make a move, he doesn't say, I just kissed her. He says, when I pushed our entire friendship to the center of the poker table, you know, and kissed you. That's amazing there, that line, pushing the entire friendship to the center of the poker table. And, you know, of course, those ending stanzas, just a beautiful way there. The whole story told here. So it was very beautiful. You know, amazing writing by Cedar Chapman here. Brad with Cedar Chapman.
Nice, Naomi, thank you. And Laurent, you got to read it. How about you?
What a beautiful love poem this is. Almost a love letter to a beloved. What makes this stand out, at least for me, is the details in the imagery. Each stanza comes alive under his pen. For instance, the baby blue Daniel Hecker sweater, ankle crop jeans and white canvas keds, no socks. She walks into English class. You can see that in your mind's eye. The way he describes himself as a small fry in a large fishbowl. Is very self-deprecating and humorous and funny and true and sad all at the same time. Every single stanza has a thought, an imagery well developed, and it really brings the whole thing alive, at least for me. The quality of the writing, wow, it's nonpareil. Excellent.
You're absolutely right. I walk the very same thought that starting with that stance you just read, I thought the imagery in that was grand. And it gives you a notion to the era and the time as well. And then dropping in that thought of the bottom end of the large fishbowl, a baby-faced halfling. And then he drops in a 5-foot, 100-pound frame, and then the reference to a Schwarzenegger. And going back to the 60s and 70s, you always got those commercials on TV of a big guy kicking sand on you. To the come to the bodybuilding of such and such as that. But there was all sorts going back then. And we will get you up to snuff for the ladies, so to speak. And even threw in flattened sand as that note of the guy kicking sand in your face. So this was a grand tale. And the back end of this... that nice little tint of walking back in time again to that the vigor of youth in that night you'll reach my for my thigh and I'll smell that salty sea air again. That notice to the goodness of life and well spent. Nicely done, Peter. All right, Jean, coming to you.
Okay, well, you got to give me 1 second because I have to finish tossing Dex a rope. Try to see. Yeah, and when he comes back, I'm going to put some crazy glue on his chip. Anyway, well, yeah, I can't help myself. I'm being silly. Naomi, can I get you to read the next one, please? It's by Emiliana.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you very much. Whenever you are ready.
Oh, boy. Entomophobia. It was the door, the brass door, the brass key jamming to its slot, the twisting handle, the creak of the hinge, the sound of the wood, the light, the frame, the steps, a 2-centimeter die-cast sink, pickable silent, cuts the handles, you'll be in this room, a screw on lid. Strength across state flag to 2,989 miles of distance, and you still don't. But you have to. not in that finish Spanish either flat, punctured by a brass knob, stationary. It's an opening. On this white mattress, I'm jutting up from its kiss. Gum piled out a pile of rain sideways, interlaying rings, pond surface, the heritage, and you're thankful to be taught. But evening maps, forecast, and satellite prior couldn't tell but remind you of that night. Under red sprock, a size, the hose spat out fluids, coated wood piles, fences at the boundary. The tree that only 1 year later severed at the trunk fell. Smoke hair hung like fog after where he demanded by working. And that as he screamed, hazard indexes and lung cancer ads piled about the house, organized hypochondriacal filed through your mind, you realize he never cared about you. As the wood rotated, pounded the frame, voice coarse, dry, flat, like painting of the person to live here, each one colored red. You barricaded the door. It took years of fighting to have one instead of a naked door. You'll use it while you have the place you go. The question, does this lock? Is the defining livability factor at each entry you lock the room? And remind yourself that every bang or footstep you hear, it's not the door itself, buzzes, nerves, pounds your ribcage, but a door, an emotion that slams, followed by trickling between the incisors of where the frame bottoms out and light filters through and shadows the name worming into your ears, the resolve to reside and lay its eggs on bits of others, lies carved into the world that had character. Name truth, factoid, caption, face that's recognized on yearbook photos, the title plastered over your door and pushed through, whereas post company brushed back the white paint. It's easy for this to see you, to control yourself, drive and let your body sink into its bones, to see dark circles in the mirror the morning 4 hours after waking early and not sleeping, but like hours to escape the shade of the canopy. They bloom and terminate in the span of a year, but the perennials live on to stench into the gaze of satellites as a mass of green blanketed in clouds standing together. I will too. I laid the oak door over my corpse, placed flowers over the mound of dirt piled over my name, returned legal documents to carbon, and bloomed in the ashes of that tired, dead house. Dried leaves scattered by western lilies lies across the yellow spine dormant upright. End poem.
Great read there, Naomi. Thank you very much. And Laurent, why don't you kick us off, please?
Well, first of all, well, let me congratulate Naomi. It was a difficult read, really, and you carried it off quite well, I thought. Even if you probably felt like you wanted to cough about six times, but you did a great job with it. You know, the complexity of this poem, its length, dessert is more than just a quick off the cuff. There is so much to digest in here, and this is so personal, so emotive. And the subject matter is not one that I've considered in my own existence. The symbolism of the door, either letting in danger or sealing it off. Sealing off danger is something I never gave much thought to. And she does a wonderful job in creating a world where everything is a metaphor. And it's so interesting when you do that, because each sentence takes you half a dozen different places. I mean, there are some exceptions to that. For instance, it took years of fighting to have one. Instead of a naked doorway, you'll use it while you have it. Each place you go, the question, does this lock? Is the defining livability factor. The way she views doors, absolutely fascinating. And the emotions that follow it, and what seems to transcend the whole thing, is the putting away of a former life to embark on a new one. It's a remarkable piece. It really is.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. And Jean, how about you?
You know, I thought that this was just a well-written piece. I thought that she conveyed the emotions well in the right. And she educated us all as to what entomophobia was. And I think she did a fine job. You know, those emotions are not always easy to capture, but I think that she did it in such a way that we all could feel it and understand. So, nice work, Emiliana. Thank you very much for sharing.
Nice. Thank you, Jean. And Dex, how about you?
I thought this was a fantastic piece, and piece that almost felt like reading as if you are watching one of those really artistic movies. It's almost like, and I don't mean to compare, but almost like Gummo or something like that, where it's like you watch it and it's just, it's something so totally different, where it's kind of harsh to you, but you just know that it's very compelling and it's very real to the people that it relates to. And I just thought this was so fascinating. I thought it was just an encapsulating piece.
Thank you, Dex. I like that. Hitchcock is good at doing those little overlays and scenes and giving you different perspectives that all kind of wormed its way into one thought. Nice touch. And Naomi, you got to read it. How about you?
Yeah, well, there's, so much emotion in this poem, you know. So many great lines. You know, like the stanza there, to assume the world of want to atone in home yourself in private and let your mind sink into a dark circle. Morning, 4 hours after waking up, not wanting to sleep again. You know, all through, you know, an amazing, you know, emotions that flood on this poem. So well written, so deserving of a front page pick. So, you know, bravo, MPN. For this poem.
Thank you, Naomi. This really was quite the stunning piece. It was filled with some great metaphorical lines that ran through it. What was it? I can't find it. As the wood rotated pounded the frame, its voice coursing through the dried wall, slapped over by the paintings of the person used to live here, each one colored red. Then you barricaded the door, and then
hits on that note in Fear of Doors itself, but also there was a where his post hoc sympathy brush slapped the bare white paint over its wound. Great thoughts in addressing powerful scenery with some imagery and metaphors that strike the mind with the actuality of what's going on. It's not an easy thing to do. And even with the thought of the carpenter ants that was thrown in here, lies carved into the world like carpenter ants, that note of everything weaving into a singularity in the moment is really stark in its involvement. So thank you, Emiliana. And we're coming to you, Dean.
Okie doke. Well, Dex, I'm coming to you. And could you stand up 1 second, please? You stand up, we're going to put some Gorilla Glue on your chair this time. Velcro wasn't. Anyway,
you want me to stand up?
Yes, I want to put some Gorilla Glue on your chair.
Yeah, well, I'm. Yeah, okay. You can glue me down for a little bit with some grape jelly there.
I'll set you some syrup.
Yeah, some syrup. Exactly. I got this little Juno, this little bugger right next to me eating such a big bite of bone. She's going crazy over this. Anyway, so I got the neighbor's dog over for a sleepover. But anyway,
Oh my God.
And her name is Juno. Her and my dog have sleepovers. Isn't that weird? Like the weirdest thing I've ever heard of in my life. Anyway, whatever piece you want to put down, I'm down for it.
I was only putting Gorilla Glue because the Velcro wasn't working. That was all. But I'll tell you what, I got the next piece to do. I got confidence. Oh my God, you're so funny. Okay, here we go. Whenever you're ready, Dex, it's up.
All right, this is Notice, Listen, Forgive by Jack Tomkovic. Caress the crap of those tossing ants to the poor without shouting, as if cradling a weak old child. Listen to the inner voice that speaks. Hug a neighbor as yourself or family. Say rosaries for all those that stung you, beat you with fists, verbs, and sticks. For they too, hit and beaten, grass, no greener path. Taken or not, no yellow bricks for them, or even frost lines. Only no. In darkened corners, hiding from monsters. How many once more do we say okay? 77 to begin. Didn't say. It's the straight mowed wood crawling on rocks and broken glass, cuts less and trotting 100 miles in moccasins. Molded for feet, not bearing frostbitten toes. Pains like a gunshot, but is asked. End point.
Great read, Dex. Thank you very much. And Naomi, why don't we start with you, please?
Yeah. I get off mute. Yeah, he says, he says all the lessons and lights that, we should be following here, turn the other cheek, notice, listen, forgive, listen to the inner voice that speaks, hug a neighbor as yourself and family, and say rosaries for all those that stung you, beat you with fists or sticks, because they're no better off, really. So, hand the other cheek and just pray for them, I guess. And, so he talks about, real life lessons, here, you know, very bright, you know, that begs for, you know, just giving forgiveness. Very powerful, especially towards the end, I found, you know, it's amazing imagery and the metaphors, the molded for feet, and moccasins molded for feet, not bearing frostbitten toes, pains like a gunshot, but his ass. You know, it's just amazing call for peace here by Jack. Amazing.
Thank you, Naomi. And Laurent, how about you?
Truly a poem about loving thy neighbor, loving humanity. In order to do that, you have to love yourself and be at peace yourself. Learn that the inner voice that speaks to you is a true voice. You're going to suffer discomforts and pain, but somehow it is all worth it. If you are asked to serve, you should serve. I see that this is a poem based on a sermon by Jack's father, who was a Franciscan priest. And I can see that. I can see his influence in this particular rite. It's a wonderful thing.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. And Jean, how about you?
But, you know, I thought this was a great job by Jack. A nicely penned piece, and it sounds like a wonderful sermon. It was a nice capture to share with us all, and I thought he did a nice job. Well done. So thank you, Jack.
And Jack, you got to read it. How about you?
Yeah, I just thought this was a fantastic piece, and people were talking about, you know, how, you know, lovely of a sermon. It just had the feel of a lot greater man than I am, unfortunately, you know. Listen to the inner voice, you know, hug their neighbor and all of these things, and beat yourself with fists, verbs, and sticks. I have such admiration for people that can live their lives in this fashion, and so I just thought it was incredible, and I would never knock any type of faith that allows somebody to live this dignified. So very well done.
Nice, Dex. Thank you very much. Kind of hits on those notes. It's easy to be critical, but unless you've walked 1,000 miles in their shoes, so to speak, you have no right to actually be that critical of any other person, and you should be treating them as you wish to be treated yourself. So quite a powerful piece there, Jack. Thank you very much. Jean, we're coming up to you.
Okay. Well, you're coming back to me, and I'm tossing one back to you. Right. So this is a piece by Jean Martino, so whenever you are ready.
All right. Story in a Cup by Daniel Vecchino. The world is buried in stories as a grassy battlefield is stained with bodies and blood, last chapters of soldiers' lives. The streets on which I so heavily stepped, paved from a forgotten company by workers undocumented, underneath which lies a penny placed by a grandfather and a young grandson, a gift for the future to find. And a diner in a simple town, heartbreak of a family purchase, now the dream of another. And I sit among the empty seats, the spirit of a half-drunk coffee cup within arm's reach. Old wood counter from a forest never photographed, premium seat entertainment street view window, protected from passes with the gathering rain, yet obscured for viewing as a two-way mirror for police interrogators to decipher facial expressions. Why the drink unfinished and abandoned? Was there a longing in those window eyes watching? Was it healed by a shadow forming humanity out of the rain? Or did depression destroy thirst and lead to a lonely lost and wood exit? I eat, drink, and read the stories before my eyes, a chapter of its own, unlikely to ever be read. And boom. And Jeff, wanted to start with you, please.
This is an interesting piece. You know, what it feels like is it feels like a certain wrongdoing done to a person, and the reality is that, that maybe this wrongdoing done is done kind of all over the place or whatever it is. Yeah, it really brings the insignificance of the person out, I feel like. And, you know, it's like a certain person can be cheated on, can be shit on or whatever. It's just you're another one in the barrel, really, in the significance of life. And I feel like this poem kind of brings that out, that loneliness and lost in the woods sense. So very well done.
Thank you, Dex. And Naomi, how about you?
I thought this was so peace, you know. There's so much in this, right? Just wow. You know, I feel like, you know, where the street on which I so heavily step paint from an on from a forgotten company by workers on document underneath which lies a pet by a grandfather and young grandson, a gift for the future to find. You know, it's just everything is just, yeah, like Dexter said, you know, everything feels so empty. And, you know, it's as if, you know, time passes by and you're, how easily everything is forgotten and you are forgotten. And, you know, as when you pass on or when you die or, you know, your time on earth, you know, everything is just, you know, there's an empty sadness to this poem. But it's so rich at the same time, beautifully rich by Daniel Dishino here. Just amazing. All right.
Thank you, Naomi. And LaRocque, how about you?
This is a wonderful story. The author extrapolating from an entire series of events and history of a diner in a simple town. I love the penny buried beneath the street, a gift for the future to find. The descriptions recreate a bygone era, and he asks the question, why the drink unfinished and abandoned? Was there a longing in those window-watching eyes, you know, that well-placed window, the opportunity to see people who can't see you, and perhaps you see their true face? Based on expressions they might not otherwise reveal. And at the end, when he was reading the stories before my eyes, a chapter of its own, unlikely to ever be read, it really makes it's pretty deep. Wonderful, wonderful story.
Thank you, Laurent. And June, how about you?
Well, you know, I thought it was a well-penned piece by Dan. Great imagery and deep thoughts throughout. And I thought he did a great job, and it was wonderful work. It was a very wonderful piece of work, that's for sure. So thank you, Dan, as always. Appreciate it.
And Dex, did I get you already? Yeah, I think I did.
I believe so.
Okay, cool. It's kind of the poem just kind of hits on that notion of moving forward. There's almost a desiccation of what used to be, that notion of morals and where they stood and where people stood within those morals. That, Ron, you hit on those questions. They were fashioned very well. Why the drink unfinished and abandoned? Was there a longing in those window-watching eyes? Was it healed by a shadow forming humanity out of the room? Or did depression destroy thirst?
and lead to a lonely, lost in the woods exit. There's a kind of a notion of what happens when a country rolls into that note of depression, like from the from 1929 onward, that those 10 years, and how everything kind of gets splintered in the moment and things change so rapidly. But I do like the back end of this too, that sort of sitting in that window and seeing around where everything is not as it once was, and it's never going to be the same again. That viewpoint is stark. Nicely done, Dan. All right, Jean, we're back to you.
Okay, I'm going to put this piece up by L.G. Mace, and I'm going to give it a read. So here we go. Witches on Parade by L.G. Mace. A coven of witches riding their souped-up hoovers lined up against the nighttime sky, revving up their motors, getting ready for drag racing, speedily fly. No shapeless black robes and pointy dark hats, all the latest designers displaying their hip outfits show. Here today, Halloween fashion is packed. Today's magic and ageless spells all filled away on laptops. Filed away on laptops, sorry. And where Granny's crystal ball safely dwells, old and new traditions make witchery what it is, crones, or comely maids. Captures the Kodak moment, witches on parade. End poem.
Great read, Jean. Thank you very much. And Naomi, what do you think?
Imagine that coven of witches riding their souped up hoovers lined up against the nighttime sky. But there's also a note that today's magic and ageless spells all filed away on laptops, and where Granny's crystal ball safely dwells. You know, all the new traditions make witchery what is spoons of commonly made. Capture the Kodak moment, which is on play. Fun piece, fun rhyme, and beautifully written. Yeah.
Thank you, Naomi. And Laurent, how about you?
You have hip witches who are technologically savvy. Wonderful bringing into the future of an old ancient tradition of witches. This is very clever and very funny.
Absolutely. And Dexter, how about you?
You know, I just find it interesting that, you know, at one point witches, being a witch, got you killed. And, you know, and to nowadays point, it's kind of an excuse to act even a little bit out on the outer scale of, I guess you'd say, promiscuous nowadays. And so it's just a total 180 of meaning of what it used to be. And I think this poem kind of bounces back and forth through that very well. So great piece.
You're right. You hit on that. Laurent hit on that with the thought with hip, and again with the Halloween fashion is where today's Halloween fashion is at. Again, that same thing, but also souped up hoovers, and then captures the Kodak moment. Things you don't hear anymore because everybody's into the digital, so you don't really take pictures anymore with film, and you don't really use hoovers because they've got those new little electronic things that buzz on their own across the floor. So everything's different on new meaning. I like what you said there, Dex, about the difference between the both angles of, now the witches are sexy as opposed to being the crones they used to be. Coming to you, Jean.
Well, I just want everybody to know that the witches can be a little more visible now because, you know, those hoovers are a lot faster than the old brooms. Just so they let you all know, that's what that's about. And I can't tell you how I know these things. Anyway, Laurent, I have your piece up next. If you'd be so kind as to read it for us.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to throw you a curve. This particular poem is kind of a semi-political rant. I'd like to drop a different poem in, one that's a little better suited to the tone of the poetry for tonight, if I can.
Sure.
All right. So it's the one called Purring. You see it? Okay. In the ease of her years, she sat, beautiful in the rays of an afternoon sun, dust motes gliding slowly around her auburn locks, a slow dance in the light. She smiled to herself as she gazed out the window at the leaves, scudding beneath the nudist trees in an arabesque of oranges and browns. Autumns are a time for reflection, stripping away the veneers of polish and poise that guarantee an anonymous intimacy to others. We age with autumn, adding another annular ring of wrinkles and embellishment to the body private. So clothes are looser, lighter, comfortable. And she was comfortable, easy in her skin, a rainbow of memory still sharp and clear these long years later. The phone rarely rang. She had outlived so many friends, relatives, parents before that, her great pain. Her two children, a boy and a girl, remained unmarried into their 50s. Professional people, serious people, who had no time for child rearing. Her husband was one of those who returned home in a box from Vietnam, and she found herself humming the Fix in a Die Rag by Country Joe and the Fish. Never remarried, several lovers, one serious, lasted years until their relationship gave up the ghost of past loves and private regrets. Eyes were heavy, and she nodded off in the warm sun, her chair rocking slightly forward and back at the touch of her foot against an old wooden dry sink, where an aged calico cat lay sleeping next to her, purring. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. And Naomi, why don't we start with you, please?
Oh, yeah, this is very touching poem, and, you know, very emotional and beautiful, beautiful image all through. But, you know, the emotion of your words that shines through in this poem, the way you can convey that emotion, and the way you finish out there, you know, we're rocking slightly forward and back at the touch of her foot against the dry sink, where an aged calico cat lay sleeping next to her. You know, that thought, it's like as if, you know, she's just, you know, you know, I don't know, the forward and back here, you know, going through life forward and back, just peacefully, you know, going out slowly, whether you take it one way or the other. I think there's a lot of significance in that, those last lines. But, you know, the way you describe this woman, you know, all throughout, it's just amazing. Just beautiful writing. Very superb writing.
Thank you, Naomi.
Nice, Naomi. Dex, how about you?
This write actually hits really home to me. Because I feel like it almost gives me the feeling of no matter what era you come from, in some way you feel slightly cheated. Like you didn't get the you didn't, you know, it's almost like from the 50s, you know, make America great again or whatever. It's like, you know, you should have had this great family. You should have had this. But it didn't really happen that way.
you know, if you were born in the Vietnam era, you should have been a hero. Or, you know, if you were done this, you know, there's just so many things that, you know, when you're in your mind, you almost take for granted of from hearing from an age. But in reality of living it, like now, it's not the truth, or it was never, you know, maybe it was never the truth, but I just feel so so profound to this piece that I thought it was just amazing because it captures, you know, maybe some reality of a time lived that in some other people's minds is very nostalgic. So very well done.
Thank you, Dex.
Nice, Dex. And Jean, how about you?
Well, you know, I sort of have a nice intent piece. I think that your readers can slip into certain parts of this writing. Everyone can relate to some bit of it. Some, unfortunately, can relate to a lot of it, you know. It's all about where they are in their lives. And I thought it was wonderful imagery, and I thought the emotions were very well conveyed to the readers. Great job.
Thank you, Jean.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Rod, there's a nice slow dance within this piece itself. I like what you finished with, a slow dance in the light. But the dust motes gliding slowly around her auburn locks, a slow dance in the light. There's a nice tone of something that you can actually physically see in your mind. And that next one, she smiled to herself as she gazed out the window at the leaves, scudding beneath denuded trees in an arabesque of oranges and browns. You set the scene well, and you hit the autumn season as that time in life, later years. But you also hit on the idea, you start out in the ease of her years, and then you hit again, and she was comfortable, easy in her skin. Though the times might have produced some heartache and some hard times raising two kids, without a father, she did well. And they're professional people. She doesn't have to worry about grandkids, or maybe she would have wanted them, but understands the fact that they're not there. And that doesn't really bother her. She's comfortable in everything that's occurred in her life because she's rocking in this chair. She's got the cat sleeping and purring next to her. Everything is peaceful. Everything is all right with the world, and she remains as a part of it, no matter what.
Nicely said. You know, she's at that stage when, like you said, it doesn't matter what happened in the past. She's all right with her life. And that is such a rarity, I find.
Yeah, too many regrets, they weigh it down. All right, Jean, mm-hmm. We're back to you.
Okay, well, Dex, I'm coming back to you if you would be so kind as to read this piece by Jack Blue. Thank you. The gorilla is working good.
Absolutely. this is Pavane for Lucy Lilac, number one, by Jack Blue. All Saints shadows passing by. Darken Lucy a little bit. Every candle flaming now to be faded into night. Her lovely home was far away beyond the illuminated sorrow. The window showed a withered tree sleeping days and nights into peace. She wished to see it to blooming bright to the lilac skies again. Did her broomstick beckon her sweetly like a little witch? In the twilight fading out, she found a bluish butterfly hovering courageously on the pool of fallen leaves, as if searching for the souls sprouting now anew to fly. Under his enchanted wings, every leaf revived well, defied the grace of gravity to play a sea of staring, starry flowers on the lonely ashy branches, waiting for the renaissance. The withered tree began to bloom, a twinkle like a lilac cloud, and raised a pair of clutches high. startle Lucy timelessly. So she should believe the blue or every wonder of the world. Believe abruptly flew away to the fabulous old blue, where the little purple star was bright than the galaxy, brighter than the galaxy, as if all saints candle lights had performed an ensemble. End poem.
Great read, Jack. Thank you very much. Laurent, why don't you kick us off for this one?
This is a charming little piece. All Saints' shadows passing by darkened Lucy a little bit. And a little witch with a broomstick bringing a tree back to life. It's a great little story. It's a moment. I don't think there's any great message in it other than the simple beauty of the imagery, which I can definitely appreciate. Nicely done.
Thank you. And Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, this you know, a beautiful tale told in a, you know, an enchanting way, beautiful language used, beautiful imagery throughout. And, you know, just a delightful, beautiful little story told here. So, bravo. Love.
Thank you. Thank you, Naomi. Jean, how about you?
You know, I thought this was a lovely piece by Luke. Great story full of sweet imagery. I think he did a wonderful job, as he does so often. It was as if I was seeing an illustration of the poem as it was being read, you know, and I think it was just a wonderful job with that. So nice work, and thanks, Luke, very much for sharing with us.
And Dexter, you got to read it. What about you?
Yeah, I thought this was just such a beautiful piece, very tactile. It was almost in the imagery of a painting or something. You know, the twilight fading out, the bluish hue, which is classic tag blue style. I just thought this was one that really stood out by him because it was very fitting. So it just was, I just enjoyed it quite a bit.
Absolutely. I did too. The sort of finishing, starting and finishing with that note to All Saints' shadows, All Saints' Day, the sort of moving out of Halloween into the new day, which is All Saints' Day, and the idea of the witch is now passed over once more until the following year rouses itself once more for her to fly again, and having that wish in that notion. It's a nice touch. I like this, Jack. And a little bit longer for Jack. Something a bit different.
Huh. Very true.
And we're back up to you.
Okay. Naomi, I have the next piece up for you, if you don't mind. It's by someone by the name of Naomi. So whenever you're ready.
Huh?
Yeah, this is called La Rêverie in French. In English, it's Rêverie. Call is the wind. Fresh wind. The moon. I read the bells of each day. Sand. Perfume your cheerful laughter, gently, light the day, light the steps, shattering our hearts, with our song, this wind, the calm.
Great read, then, Naomi. Thank you very much. And Jean, why don't we start with you?
just beautifully done, Naomi. Such a nice, soft, gentle tone to it all the way through. And I think that it was amazing. So I have to tell you, a wonderful job with this. I liked your image at the top of it. And I have to assume that maybe that was a prompt. And if not, it was a great choice for the poem. And well done. And thank you for sharing with us tonight. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jean. Okay. And Dex, how about you?
Yeah, I thought this was an amazing piece. It's mythological. It silver is the moon, dark is the sky, red is the wine. I mean, golden is the honey. I mean, she just captures all of these things. It's so spellbinding. I just thought that this was incredible, and I thought this was very well fitting for the time piece, or for the time of year that this is, because this is the time of year for this sort of storytelling. So very well done.
Thank you, Dick.
And Laurent, how about you?
This is well titled, Reverie. The writer's skin, Naomi's skill in selecting words sets a tone that is so, well, peaceful and calming, as was noted earlier. And she does it, naming the moment. Calm is the wind. Warm is the weather. Fresh, sweet, silver, starry, red, golden. Everything is named and described so carefully all the way through here. Continues to move that tone of calm. Really well done, Naomi. Hell of a piece.
Thank you.
Excellent. Great comments, guys. Naomi, the short lines that you dropped in offer up the nice scenery and the flavor drawn in. But I like you, Jean said it was soft, and it is. But more importantly, it walks a nice tone of sensuality without actually delving any deeper than offering up the scenery and the sound, as well as the visuals that you imply, because it fits that picture well. And it does offer up that meeting of two and their enjoyment in the moment itself. So you did very well.
Thank you. This is actually one of the PAM props the contest. So. But it did get red at the top you put on here.
Nice. Thank you. And, oh, we're back to you, Jean.
Nice hesitation. Okay. Next piece I'm going to put up, I have a SoundCloud for, and I have two more pieces of this I would love to get through, so I'm hoping. I got my fingers crossed. This one here is by Stelina. It's called Seduction 101. And, yes, here we go.
Seduction 101. Come closer, honey. I'm going to teach you all there is to know. Now you may think you know the score, my friend, but I am here to show you which way to bend. For a woman needs to be treated right. She needs to be loved. That is her. Take your time now, honey. reveal these secrets unto you. Come on, honey, show me what you can do. Let the night ring with our amorous sighs. Thrill me with your passion till the darkness dies. And when the dawn breaks, wrap me in your arms, ripened with the memory of your loving charms. Our heated skins aglow with burning embers of what the night shamelessly remembers.
Wonderful piece there, Stelena. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Naomi, we're going to start with you. Naomi, you there?
Oh, boy. Oh, I was blabbing on by myself. And it was so clever, too. And, I was just saying, you know, what a voice, Stelena. Oh, my gracious. You know, I this is the first time I heard her sing. And, you know, of course, with that amazing soft voice, of course she can carry it too. She can sing so beautifully. You know, I didn't want this to stop. You know, I was there. Oh, come on, sing some more. what a seductive and dripping, you know, sultry, just a beautiful, wow, just wow, wow, Stelena, bravo, beautiful.
Thank you, Naomi. Dex, how about you?
Oh, this was incredible. You know, this is an amazing SoundCloud. There was such a sound quality to it. You know, it was all to it, you know, because it's one thing to make something that sounds appealing, and there's another thing that has something that follows a certain sound quality track. And so she did all of the above. I mean, this was like a 90s R&B song. This was fantastic. I thought that this was incredible.
Excellent. Thank you, Jack. Laurent, how about you?
That was a stunning performance. It's perfectly recorded. Beautifully sung. I mean, wow, so impressive. So hot, sultry, and seductive. I was fighting sleep until this came on, and now I am wide awake. If I heard this on the radio, I would stop, I would listen, I would find out the title, and I would add it to the playlist. This was simply a great piece.
Excellent. Thank you, Laurent. Gene, how about you?
Oh, I thought it was an excellent right by Stelena. Just hot stuff. Very well-performed piece and really well-penned. I slept in on the air conditioner. Look at that. So this room was real good. Yeah. Beautiful job, Stelena. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Oh, great comments, everybody. And you're right. I wasn't expecting the musical interlude and the singing, so that added another little touch to it. And the background with the moaning and groaning was also a nice touch that played off the voice in this, too. So, well done, Stelena. Jeez. I think you slapped us upside the head. Nobody was expecting that.
Nope. I was.
Well, you laid it up, so you would be.
I said, uh-oh. I said, look at the world. That's a wonderful job for sure. Okay. Now, I'll tell you what. I have one by Dex, but I have a short one that I want to put in between. Salinas and his. This is one I requested. This is by Damn It Dave. So, Rick, can you give this a read for us? It's just a short poem, but I said it was a beautiful poem. So whenever you're ready.
Okay, okay. Does the Autumn Tree, by Damn It Dave. Does the Autumn Tree weep for fallen leaves as she watches them lay dying upon the ground and bone? Laurent, why don't you kick it?
The poet immediately puts us into or behind the eyes of the tree. You can see it. It's a beautiful image. It's perfectly rendered. And I just found myself all of a sudden in my head, I was the tree looking down at the leaves. He is an enormously skillful poet.
Nice. Thank you, Laurent. And Naomi, how about you?
Oh, yeah, me too. You know, I was just, like Laurent said, I was that tree, you know, and does the autumn tree, you know, the way he personified the tree there, weeping for its fallen leaves, like a mother weeping for, you know, a dying baby, you know, just amazing, amazing, amazing poem here, so cleverly. Clever brevity. Bravo, Dan.
Thank you, Naomi. And Dex, how about you?
I thought it was interesting, you know, because, I can easily see people saying, viewing themselves as a tree, but I also kind of view as, what does that say about us and our losses? You know, because it's like, We take our losses so hard, you know. I wonder if that's what the tree is like every year. You know, you wonder the commonalities that we share. This is just such an intriguing piece, and I thought it was just fantastic.
I like that, Dex. Thank you. And Jean, how about you?
Well, you know, when I read this the other day, I was, like, taken back because – I'm so used to seeing everything with Damn It Games as being a rhyming poem and, you know, it has a wonderful story and everything else. And I read this and I was just like, I was really wowed by it. I thought it was a wonderful poem and I thought that it was just, I thought it was just beautiful. You know, a brevity, but brevities can be incredible things. So I absolutely loved it. So I did request it for tonight and I'm happy that he put it up for us.
Excellent, great comments, everybody. I gave you, I'm like you, Gene. I'm so used to seeing Dave and spot on perfect rhyme and rhythm and flow, and to see him with just five lines without rhyming is something a bit different. Taken aback, and it's a nice, pleasant off the track motif, so to speak. Hi, Dave.
Yeah.
Right, Dean, you're at the very end, so it's all coming to you once more.
Well, yes, I only have a little less than a minute left for the show. But I would like to get Dex's in, and if everybody would hang on and just comment for him, I would appreciate it.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
Here we go, this piece is called by Duke of St. Paul, Dex Bailey. There we go. Whenever you're ready, Dex.
Okay, this is Enola by Duke of St. Paul, Dexter Bailey. I want to do this one. This is Native American Heritage Month. Small town cruelty can be so vicious. Cinchotrilia alopecia, the sickness, causing Enola's hair to fall out. Native, so this hurts her deep down. White girls in her class often crack jokes. Doctor's solution, not giving much hope. Clump by clump, she'd awake to see. Stuck in her pillow, tears ran down her cheek. Every day at school, kids pointed and snickered until Enola ran away at recess, crying a river. She ran into the forest so no one could find her, hoping to find a spot to curl up and die there. Screaming, she tripped on a rock and then fell, sobbing and thinking this world must be hell. Suddenly she looked up, a brush of magnolias, beauty exploding, the meaning of Enola. Admiring the sight, she noticed an eagle perched atop of an oak tree. She waved and a smile burst. Her foot in a puddle, she looked down in disbelief. The great spirit had visited her, granting relief. She returned to recess, her classmates silent, mouths wide open, as she walked by defiant. Most gorgeous girl anyone had ever seen. Her hair now flowers, her strides a summer breeze. End poem.
Great read, Dex. Thank you very much. All right, Gene, why don't you kick us off?
First of all, I have to get off the mute. I thought this was wonderful, Dex. The story, I don't know if you've done something similar in the past, but it struck me as something I almost recognized. Oh, 2 years ago. I did recognize it. I'm not crazy. Okay. Wow. I thought this was and I thought it was a great write. Beautifully written. And the story of Enola, I thought, was just gorgeous all the way through. I love the most gorgeous girl anyone had ever seen. Her hair now flowers, her strut the summer breeze. I just thought that was beautiful. I thought that you turned it around nicely from the beginning, and you transitioned nicely, and the end was just wonderful. So very nicely done, and excellent job.
Thank you, Phil, for your comments, and thank you, Laurent, for the original read. I thank you both. Yes, for this piece.
Oh, okay. And that brings us to Laurent. How about you?
I remember this piece happily. I just thought that it was a very spiritual piece. I love the fact that he chose the name Enola. It brought me to mind of the Enola Gay, which I believe was the plane that dropped the atom bomb. The way he presents her return after the spiritual moment in the forest, and her hair is done done up in flowers, was really a skillfully created image that I found quite moving. You know, the return of the persecuted one in triumph, and I like that a lot.
Nice, thank you, Naomi. How about you?
Oh, yeah, this is rich in emotion. It brings back so many memories. I had a girl in one of my classrooms that, you know, had this, I don't know what it was, a sickness, disease, and the clumps of her hair would fall out. And, she wrapped her hair in a bandana or scarf because she was ashamed of it. So it brings back very many memories, and of course the other kids would tease her. But you know, I love, like everybody else, you know, and like Sarah said, that she comes back in triumph, you know, and goes through a spiritual situation there, a spiritual transformation, you know, that brings a great, great strength in true itself. So it's just an amazing piece, Dex. Amazing, right?
Excellent. Thank you, Naomi. Dex, Laurent and Naomi hit on same thoughts I was working on, because the back end of this, even despite the abject horror to start with, and then walking into the spirit world, so to speak, and coming across that which she needed to in the moment. The back end of this walks, as Ross said, triumph, but it also blooms in that note of the ugly duckling turning into that swan in the moment, that rebirth of the person itself.
Thank you, Rex.
Oh, you're welcome. All right, Gene, we'll come to you for closing moments.
Okay, everybody. Listen, I want to thank everyone who called in and joined us tonight. And, Laurent, thank you for calling at the beginning and hanging out all night long. And Naomi and Dex, of course. Gorilla Glue. Remember that. It's the best. It works well. I'm just playing.
Number 10.
Thank you so much for co-hosting with me, as always. Much appreciated. I appreciate everything you do. And I have 8 carryovers, so don't be surprised, anybody. I have Sapphire Rose, A.R. Mundell, Arcana Amore, Weaver of Dreams, Martha Gettle, Kiku, Diane D., and Eric Daniel Herman. And so you did not do your pieces right tonight, but they will be on the top of the list for next Friday. Thank you, everybody, and I hope you have a wonderful weekend. And anyone who can, join for Part 10 or Part 8 with Aphasiana and Babla. And, yep, you all take care of yourselves and have a great week. And I hope to hear from you next week. See you all later.
Good night, gang.
Good night, buddy.
Good night.
Hugs and kisses.
Much love.